views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
I would love to have seen zombie Hawkeye fight a shark.
Oh, that would have been
fucking
amazing.
Incredible. It's one of my hands-down favorite zombie moments of like all zombie cinema.
Yes.
Is the Fulci zombie underwater fight a shark scene.
Yep.
And the story behind that is crazy, that they like fully put the put tranquilizers on the shark, so the shark was just like hammered.
Yeah.
Dealing with this person dressed as a zombie, like fighting him.
Oh, back before all those laws were
before all those stupid protected animals.
Fucking bullshit. One thing we didn't get from Fulci is a giant zombie wasp like we did in What If. That was pretty rad.
That would have been, yeah.
Can we get like a giant sized zombie?
I think that's my nightmare. I haven't watched any of the What Ifs yet, but that sounds so upsetting.
Well, zombies with powers sounds upsetting.
Well, that's fair.
We're used to brainless, you know, like Romero, Fulci.
Well, that's
zombies.
Like the American zombies are the ones that are like unpowered, just. Then you get into like the like Italian horror stuff where the zombies are made from like witchcraft or fucking the door to hell.
Actually, hell
is like is beneath the building and shit.
There you got the voodoo zombies.
Yeah, there's the more mystical end, which has always been kind of a play on the Italian horror thing.
Right. There's a blur between zombie and demon, like what is and what is it. It's sort of just the other side in general, right?
Well, and they always incorporate like spooky shit with just normal scary shit, like. Argento, just everything he does, there's witches and serial killers.
He doesn't necessarily blend the two. Like, it's either witches or serial killers.
Okay.
Like,
all right.
It's the two causes of the evil in the world is witches or serial killers.
But he does it so well.
He does.
And
he
with
does.
So much bisexual lighting.
So much bisexual lighting.
I think they just used a lot of red, green, and blues. I'm just saying.
You're probably correct, and it does delight me as a bisexual that we can say Dario Argento lighting and bisexual lighting almost interchangeably.
No, but, and fair. Even Creepshow. I feel like Creepshow utilized, speaking of Romero, he utilized a lot of that lighting.
Yeah.
Well, that brought in a lot of those like kind of neon blue colors a little bit more than
the red shot was a big one, too.
Yeah,
yeah.
That comic book style.
Mm-hmm. Somebody looked at their color wheel in elementary school and really loved it.
Yeah, right. I always loved the giallo genre in general, but, you know, the Artur that was known for those stark contrasting colors, of course, is Argento. I mean, those movies are stunning.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
Especially through the 70s and 80s. And I would definitely say that, like, part of the way he directed, like, he treated everything as its own character. Like, everything is a living character, whether it's the movies, whether it's the camera, whether it's the lighting, it's the music. All of that is a life.
I was rewatching some Argento getting ready for this episode, and the sink had to have had the best agent, because there was just like a zoom in of like water dripping. He was fully informing the scene like he's John Updike explaining a staircase, where like there's water dripping and then someone's and then
feels like Deep
then
Red.
You see wind blowing. I think it was Deep Red. Yeah,
yeah. He really places the Easter egg like hardcore in some of these movies, where it's like the littlest detail at the beginning becomes a thing at the end. You're like, no, really?
That is Deep Red.
Yeah,
through
and
through. Like
100%.
The answer is at the beginning, and you just don't even pay attention to it.
Nope.
Because you're not even there mentally. He makes sure you're not even at the place to think about that.
I love that's that
awesome.
In horror, though, when they
it's so good.
The horror movies where they literally announce what the conclusion is at the beginning of the movie. Well, I guess it was that guy down the street maybe murdered those kids. And then it's the guy down the street that murdered the kids. You know,
fucking pay attention. That's basically yelling at you the whole time.
I mean, he's done that since The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, because the answer is in the very first thing that he sees. Like,
true.
It's almost like if we had all just paid a little more attention, y'all would fucking know this, huh? You're like, oh, okay.
Sorry.
Speaking of paying attention, we hope you were paying attention to this episode all about Dario Argento. That's the best transition I could do at that moment. But we are finishing out our Halloween season, our Podoween episodes, with a episode all about the auteur of giallo, Dario Argento. And just a beautiful use of color. We're going to be getting into a lot of talk of cinematography and color usage, and also just like the tonal difference between Italian and American horror at the time in the 70s and 80s for sure.
Oh, big time.
Big time. On this episode of Geeks on the Influence, all things Dario Argento.
Yay!
This is a long time coming. We've talked, I think even a couple years ago, we were talking about doing an Argento episode, and we just haven't gotten around to it yet.
No, it's fair, because, I mean, it's such a big subject, and you got to get the right time for it. October is the time.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really.
And also, if we're talking about we've had conversations about more modern horror auteurs, where you're getting that art house style kind of being incorporated into modern horror aesthetics, it is the time to talk about Argento, which very much is part of that vibe.
I mean, he really, Bava before him, but he really kind of shotgunned that into the zeitgeist of cinema.
Yeah.
Really.
I would say that we owe a ton of the stylized horror. I would say that Ari Aster especially owes a ton of the way that he utilizes color and camera work to Argento, and I don't even think that he's trying to hide it at this point.
Yeah, when we did, and Greets, you were on this episode, when we did our, the new Renaissance of Horror, should actually said New American Renaissance of Horror, because America would not be going through this giant awakening in horror if it wasn't for some of these old Italian directors. Mm-hmm. We're talking now, we're getting these movies, but these are 50-year-old movies that inspired. And now we're getting a resurgence, when the first Argento was what, 74?
Jesus.
70.
Yep.
Like, wow, 1970. Fuck, man.
Yep. And that's his debut. The things he wrote came before that.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
Yeah,
he was a critic for a long time.
Well, I mean, and you can even see elements of Argento's style with a director like Nicholas Winding Refn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at movies like Only God Forgives or The Neon mm-hmm. Demon.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Visually utilize that sort of almost giallo-esque art house color palette and cinematography. That was an influence.
Well, and this
had
is
to be.
Great timing for us to talk about giallo with Edgar Wright throwing his hat in the ring on giallo with One Night in
about
Soho.
To bring that movie
my
up.
God.
Yeah, that's
holy
be
shit.
Fucking gorgeous.
I mean, just amazing. By the trailer, I'm like, oh, motherfucker just spent pandemic watching Argento movies and was like, I need to make a movie.
Yep.
I cannot wait for that.
Yeah.
Did you see the music video they released?
No.
Where Anna Taylor-Joy, is that her name?
Yeah.
She sings a fucking old school song, and it's like a 5-minute snippets of the movie with her singing.
Oh my
I'm
god.
Like, oh my god.
That's amazing. Well, before we get any further into this episode, the influencers on this episode, our panel, to my left, coming back from the Midnight Madness episode was the last, the mini-show that we did, we were on.
Yeah.
The last spooky that we did for Halloween. Mm-hmm. We've got Murphy Lawless here.
Hi, friend. Thanks for having me.
I'm happy that we had to do that remote just because of time constraints. Glad mm-hmm. we're in the studio, able to have this fun together.
I know. I'm excited to gaze at all of your faces and to share a beer with you again.
I do enjoy that of looking around and just being like, my friends are so smart and pretty. It's great.
It's me the whole time.
Then next up, of course, is one of the hosts of Beautiful Disasters, my friend and your favorite, the Groots. Herr Groots is here.
Jawohl.
Jawohl.
Good to see you guys.
I would say out of the table here, I think it's safe to say that though we are all fans of Argento, you're more obsessive with Argento than we are, I would say.
Yes, I would say so, because I actually got a giant Suspiria piece put on my arm.
Yeah.
By That's our beautiful. Lovely friend, Chris Wilson, who
he did
does
such a good
amazing
job.
Amazing job tattooing. Mm-hmm. And yes, I'd been thinking about it for years, and I finally pulled the trigger earlier this year. It's a beautiful piece. Yes, I have literal freaking Argento on my body.
Nah, I'll try to remember if you're okay with it, sending out a picture of your tattoo around
yes.
the time this episode drops.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just
sure.
for people to take a look at it, because it's beautiful. Oh, God, it's gorgeous.
It is mm-hmm. gorgeous.
It's a great piece.
He really captured that color palette well.
Oh, yes, mm-hmm. he did.
Speaking about a great piece, my co-host on this episode...
All right.
He's more than a snack. He's king size. We're talking about the sexual chocolate lowdown Brown MacGyver is here.
What's going on, everybody? Yeah. King size.
King size.
That's a new one. I've been a huge Argento fan, and I didn't even, I went down a rabbit hole in my early 20s between the big three of giallo. Mm-hmm. And because there was still, it was back in the day when we had video stores.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a Hollywood Video right up the corner street from my house, and they just had, like, everything, you know, at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, Deep Red, Suspiria, Tenebre, Phenomena, Inferno.
Nice.
So I just get... Same thing with Fulci. I got to go through all of Fulci's that way, too, you know.
Nice.
Bava, I forget what they had from him, because his
probably
releases,
like Kill Baby Kill or...
Yeah, his releases were a little more...
Sort of thing.
Duet.
Well, they were about a decade earlier, too.
Yeah, there was, so a little harder to come across his... I think I only got to see like two or three of his at the time. But anyway, so it's been a while. I've been a fan of his films.
Yeah, Argento for me, that was when I was like confusing all the Italian directors of being the same, where I saw Zombie, I think, before I even saw Suspiria.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, yikes, big zombie movie fan. And then I watched Suspiria and went, this is slightly different than Zombie.
That's like just
a little different. And then realized, yeah, they're totally different people.
And, I think that's what's awesome. When
I was a child,
we're
by
keep
the way.
Referencing the big three, but like each one is their own, but still served a purpose in the entire genre. Yes. I think that's what's amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think there is still a tone that is shared between, they all go their own way. I mean, you can't say that Fulci films look like Argento films.
Not at all.
But there is still kind of a tone, like Southern California pop punk of the 90s.
Camera work is the same on a lot of them.
Yeah.
I feel like.
The only two that I have come across, like the big debate over, is The Beyond and Inferno get a lot of like debate about them.
Yeah. Sure.
Those are the two that because they're both done in such like created more like a painting than a film kind of style.
Right.
That was definitely a slightly different use of color than a lot of the other Fulci films.
Yes.
So
well, The Beyond had a specific color which was different for him.
I would say like, that the Beyond was itself. The Zach and Miri make a porno of of his films, where Zach and Miri very much feels like a Judd Apatow movie, but it's actually Kevin Smith directing.
Okay.
But they're in the same genre of directors, and so he's kind of borrowing the tone from a more successful director.
Go ahead.
And the man who just made a confusing reference.
Yeah, it's maybe the only time anyone has compared The Beyond to Zach and Miri make a porno.
Yeah, that's kind of like I see what you're saying, but I'm kind of also like still stuck at that comparison.
It made way more sense in my head.
Most things do.
Yeah, that would be the autobiography title for me.
That would be the autobiography of Mike. I'll pick it.
Hey,
Jesus.
No one will buy that.
I would. I fucking would. I would buy that hard.
You've been here the whole time. You don't need
There's
to read the
things I don't hear. There's still things I don't hear.
You don't want to hear the shit inside of his brain.
Oh, I'm so nosy. I do want to fucking
know. I'm just curiosity.
You'd be like... Like in Almost Famous, we're like, I didn't say that. Like reading dude's article.
You totally
I'm
did.
Like, yeah, lowdown, you did.
I
didn't.
Did. Yeah.
Okay, that does sound like me. Fuck.
That tracks.
This is not angry enough to be me.
That I would argue.
Yeah,
like,
fair.
You know, it's a bridged version.
But definitely check out GUIpodcast.com for links for all the shows on our network, including this one. And of course, From the Mouths of Madness, from Lowdown, Beautiful Disasters, from the Groots.
Hell yeah.
And a couple other shows that I'm on.
All of them.
All the other shows.
Jesus Christ.
Follow, rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff. Tell your friends. It's a party. So let's get on to the real party. I want to start off with kind of the base level thing, the movie that everybody is the most familiar with when it comes to Argento. Even if you're not a fan of the giallo genre, you're familiar with this film, if you're a horror movie nerd at least, is Suspiria.
Yes.
Of course.
Right.
Yes. Oh, and I don't know if everyone did get to see that movie live.
I did not.
With Goblin.
I did.
Oh, I
Jesus.
Did.
Damn, that shit was good.
Oh, boing.
I'm just going to listen to you guys talk about it and fucking touch
for
myself.
Those unfamiliar.
There you go. Get it.
Those unfamiliar, the Bird Theater, which is this like historical movie theater in Carytown in Richmond, where we're based. And they had Goblin. Like the actual band or the remaining members of
Claudio Simonetti.
Yeah, Claudio Simonetti.
Who was the nicest motherfucker, dude.
He's so nice.
Both
he
times.
Signed all my shit.
Yeah,
he
come through twice, one doing Suspiria and one doing Deep Red, I think.
I was there.
I was hoping when we would get the anniversary of Dawn of the Dead, because I remember asking whoever was working for the theater that night.
Probably Damien.
And I was like, dude, Dawn of the Dead anniversary is coming up. Can we get Goblin back for that? Because they did the soundtrack on that, too.
Yeah.
Please, please, please.
Anytime they come through town, I'm going to be there.
Oh, fuck yeah.
So I will say one thing. Suspiria is by far his best and most iconic film. However, it's not really a giallo.
No, it's not.
It's really more like this is part of his supernatural, like sort of witchcrafty like trilogy that he did.
Three Mothers.
The Three Mothers trilogy. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
He still utilizes a lot of his like filming styles and his kills and all kinds of
color
stuff
palette,
like that.
Cinematography.
Color palette that he uses in Suspiria in his giallo like runs.
Mm-hmm.
But man, how iconic is this movie?
Oh my God, it's unreal. To the point they did the remake where I think it was just Tilda Swinton was in that movie.
Yeah.
Playing all the different roles.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
Tilda Swinton was the main ballet dancer, was the witch, was like every character.
If you want to hear more about that remake, you can listen to the Mouths of Madness Killer Filler.
Oh, Shameless. I love it. I love it.
We go in deep on the, because we didn't need to talk about the original, but we do dive in heavy on the remake.
Oh, yeah.
And you see how the outcome and how we feel about that.
I would definitely say that like he utilized the structure of the giallo film for Suspiria while not being a giallo, because he did a lot of that same misdirection and showing you exactly what it was at the beginning of the film, where like he kind of gave you all of those clues and then let it unfold and let it grow to that crescendo and get like more and more violent. I still have dreams about the razor wire.
Fucking maggots, man.
I'll throw it to Groots because I think he would be best able to explain it for those unfamiliar with like the term giallo.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's relating to Italian horror, obviously. But
so giallo translates to yellow.
Yep.
Okay.
It's literally the color yellow in Italian, and what it really references as far as a film genre is that it is a sort of crime-ridden mystery thriller sort of scenario. It can be horrific. It can be there are giallos that are a little bit more lighthearted, but like usually there's a killer, a mysterious killer. There's a mystery going on. There are, it's usually a damsel style thing in distress. You know, this particular genre usually features like women in distress a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a period, but
it was 70s and 80s.
It was very effective. There's a lot of blood, gore, nudity,
and bless them for it.
There's everything that I want to see in a movie.
Very
basically.
Bright red blood.
Yeah.
Bright red, yes.
Sometimes orange.
It lends itself to that painter quality.
Deep red.
Oh,
stop. No, see, no.
Yay. No, sometimes it's straight up Ferrari red.
Yeah.
Like, so red, you're like, that's not a person.
Most Argento films, it's just
that
blazing
person filled with paint?
Red.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even after they had the blood formula that Savini introduced, they still use bright red.
But the biggest visual sort of trademarks of this particular genre is the color palette, the cinematography style, which is usually like very close up. There's a lot of interesting shots,
mm-hmm.
a lot of zooms, interesting things done with the camera. But the color palette is huge in this because like there's often like a lot of just like hazy dreamlike sequences, mm-hmm. like all kinds of stuff like that. And there's a million giallos out there. Yeah.
I would say one of the big things with this genre, at least as far as the camera work and the cinematography goes, is they almost want you to focus on everything but the character.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much background and scenery that you just chew up that it's almost like your character isn't the main focus of the films, and I think that's a good take on, because you're still invested, but you're seeing everything around them more so than just them and them walking and them moving and them doing.
Well, everything. One of the things that I noticed that Argento does a lot, that his like one of his big favorite things is killer point of view cam, which I think also lends itself to us seeing like we're really focused on seeing through the killer's eyes. We get that with the kills, we get that with the scenery, and so it drives our movement, and sometimes it lends to some of his crazier camera shots too.
We'll definitely get into some of those later.
One of the other things about giallo that I thought was that they were often referred to as like black gloved killer films. Is that correct?
So this kind of ties into what I was about to say. Is the fact that, I mean, although Mario Bava kind of created the proto giallo early on in the late 60s, it really wasn't until Argento came along with the bird with the crystal plumage, and then Cat of Nine Tails.
I'm going to say the bird with the crystal pubis. That's a plumage. Very different movie.
Plumage.
Yeah. Okay.
It's
what do you watch?
It's a word I've maybe used 5 times in my life, 3 times on this podcast.
Yeah, fair.
Pubis or plumage?
Plumage.
No, he says pubis all the time. It's kind of a problem. Yeah, yeah. He says it in the most inappropriate times.
Cat of Nine Tails and Four Flies on Grey Velvet was like kind of his like early giallo trilogy, the animal trilogy.
Yeah.
But what he cemented there was a style that was going to be copied and copied and copied. And there's a like hundreds of giallo movies.
Oh, yeah.
Throughout the 70s and 80s that just completely like did their best to, it was the Black Glove Killer.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, there are the knife wounds into naked women, like all these things, like
the tropes of the genre.
Camera shots. Yeah. It was copied and copied.
Yep.
So I have a question. Here's an early Michael Caine film. Do you think that fits in giallo territory? Dress to Kill.
Dress to Kill?
Yeah. That's it's a black. I mean, it's a good question.
No.
You get a lot of the killer point of view, but you also get a lot of pan out shots of the kill happening, and you get, so you'll see just the black glove and slice, and then you might get a glimpse of the killer to moving to, you actually see the killer.
Was that early Brian De Palma? Dress to Kill?
Was that Brian De Palma?
I don't know. I'm trying to remember.
I think it has oh God, she played Chris Jorgensen in Carrie.
She was in Carrie. Yeah. Oh, damn it. And she was, oh, fuck. What's her
name? I think you're right that is Brian De Palma.
It might be. No, absolutely. There was so much, like these movies.
Or is giallo like Kölsch beer, where it has to be made in Germany, but technically Kölsch?
You mean like Scotch recipe?
And then everywhere else it's Kölsch style.
Is this the champagne versus sparkling
giallo
wine?
Style versus actual giallo?
Well, I mean, the
champagne's from the Champagne region. And,
yeah.
The inspiration of giallo genre spreads far and fucking wide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I mean, like a lot of the neo-noirs that came out through like the 80s, 90s, and even today, again, like I said, Nicholas Winding Refn, they are looking at this genre for inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And Argento really cemented it like hardcore.
Dude, talking about lighting reference, I was thinking about one of the movies that I'm obsessed with, Mandy. If Cosmos says that he's never seen any of Argento's films, that man is a fucking liar.
Yeah, no shit. Because,
oh, no, absolutely.
Oh, my God, that saturation.
And, I mean, you can go into the film, I think it was right after that, that really goes all over the color spectrum and the color out of space. Like, the color fucking film.
Well, that's Richard Stanley.
I just meant as far as just the color palette they used in that fucking film. Oh, my God.
High contrast, like, really gorgeous. Sharp.
So beautiful.
Colors.
You like forget you're watching something you're supposed to be scared.
Yeah.
Because it's so beautiful.
Yes.
And that's kind of the essence of giallo, I think. And Argento cemented that too. Mm-hmm. Like
it is.
Especially with Suspiria. You're watching this film that is horrific, but it's like so beautiful that at times until something happens, there's those gaps where you're like, so like the gap in between like the maggots and the razor wire, you're like, oh, this is, you know, this is a dancing school. And
it's so pretty. It's beautiful.
Well, all right, so let me talk a little bit about the criticism of his films, just very briefly, which ties into what you just said.
How dare you?
So a lot of people criticize the fact that his films don't have a plot that you can follow, or they're
what?
Not.
Oh, bullshit.
No, hold on.
Okay,
hold on.
Very I'm sorry. Simple go plots, on. Usually.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa.
I'm sorry. I know. I'm holding it in.
Hold on.
Everybody's
that they're nonlinear, that they're convoluted, they don't make any sense, blah, blah, blah. However, that is not the fucking point. They're missing the goddamn point because his movies are designed to be like nightmares.
Yes.
Okay. You want to leave an Argento experience feeling like, what the fuck did I just experience?
Yeah.
Like I just watched a David Lynch movie, but way more colorful.
Yeah. So I was going to say, do you think Lynch was inspired heavily by Argento? Because he literally said in interviews that like, I come up with my movies, they're a dream. Like I dream them.
Yes.
And he writes down his dreams, and that is his reference for a film.
Argento has literally said the exact same thing multiple times, is that,
that is awesome.
The way that he constructs his scripts and his ideas are from dreams, from his nightmares. He doesn't, like, it'll take shape as that, and then he'll start like seeing it all lay out before him, And then, like, he'll go and find locations and specific images from there. And then all of that helps unfold it and bring it into the plot. But
fucking
it's
awesome,
yeah.
Man.
I will say between the two, though, like, Argento is definitely a little bit more approachable than Lynch. Like, Argento yeah. is definitely, like, a weird dream, but Lynch is just like, there's a monkey smoking a cigarette, and now you go inside the box and you're lesbians now. Like, there's all sorts of fucking insane shit that...
He's not wrong, though. Yeah, like, he's not wrong.
Oh, how did I...
No, Lynch is his own animal. He's his own auteur, and
definitely
and
influences from this era of film.
Oh, absolutely.
Because Lynch was all about, except for, like, what, like Elephant Man and Eraserhead? He was.
I mean,
all
he
about,
really came up
like,
through like
palette.
Experimental film, and he had a period where he made some films that made a little bit of sense, and then he has just drifted into madness. And I love his journey.
Yeah,
I love his journey.
Like, but, if he was like a college kid now, he'd be the guy at the like the boba tea shop set up with like all the boards and wires playing like really weird noise music. That's like. I used to be into Glitch, but that's too commercial now. And just making like really fucked up weird noise music. Yeah. That would be his drive.
Argento has said multiple times in interviews and whatnot in his book that one of his biggest influences was Hitchcock.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Now
they call him the Italian Hitchcock sometimes, but
they
I
do.
Don't necessarily feel like that's as correct as it
but
could be.
What I really feel is
I think
like
he started calling himself that and was like, no, you heard people call me that, right?
No, I think that okay. That was that's something given to him and he was like, I don't think that's correct.
No,
he's a lot more structured.
And I think the reason for that is that his style is so much different than Hitchcock in the sense that like Hitchcock will usually have a very sort of linear style story.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
like everything yep. kind of happens in front of you. And no doubt, Hitchcock's a master in the way that he delivers that. Argento's style is so much more like obscure and weird and like I don't want to say philosophical, but like he really just like gets inside your brain, you know,
existential to a degree.
It's bizarre.
No, I think philosophical is a decent way to put it because like. He's definitely, with each of his films, even if it's you know, a story based off of a nightmare, he's digging into himself because, like, nightmares come from our subconscious. And so all of that are things that he's drawing from his own experiences. And, like, it's the stuff that even his daughter's talked about where she's like, I don't really want to dig into too much what it means that he's, you know, killed my mother and killed my sisters and killed me in all of his films.
Yeah.
I will say, I don't know if it's just an Italian thing or an Argento thing, but like if those are his dreams, he has so much prettier dreams than me. Like the last nightmare that I had was where I breathed through my feet and then I was walking through a stream and I couldn't breathe because my feet were underwater and I was worried that I was going to drown before I crossed the stream. That's not a movie. That's nothing.
No, that sounds just, like a Lynch movie.
That's more.
Sounds like a fucking
or
Lynch
maybe
movie.
A little Cronenberg in there.
Yeah,
for good measure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was taste in the dirt, the mud, and the way it was a whole fucking thing. But,
God.
Yeah, I don't dream in fucking bright reds and like fucking like beautifully contrasting.
I wish my dreams looked like Argento movies.
Sometimes
oh, fuck.
Mine do.
If that was the case, whatever fucked up shit happened in there, I would just still be like, this is really disturbing, but I'm okay with it because it's so beautiful.
You would think that, but no.
If I dreamed in like that color palette to like a Tool soundtrack, I would be perfectly fine. I'd be perfectly fine.
I would be
that.
Like, can you induce me into a coma?
Yes, I never want
to
wake up.
I don't need to actually exist in real
like,
life.
Hey, Swolemaid, where's Steven? He was supposed to be here like 2 hours ago. He's sleeping again. Like, all he does now is sleep.
Yeah.
No. Ever since he got that fucking that Tool soundtrack that goes directly into his dreams, he's just done.
Y'all can have that
shit.
He's
got this VR headset on. I don't know what
he's
watching.
Vivid ass nightmares. Mm. And sometimes I get those color palettes, and it's still fucked up, and I still hate it.
Aww.
Alan gets all those phone calls where I'm like, so last night I dreamed about head-on collisions. And he's like, Jesus Christ, babe.
Knowing my luck, I'd end up getting like directed by Uwe Boll nightmares.
No.
Like just really bad costumes.
Oh,
no.
Substandard plot.
That's horrible.
Yeah,
it's
just rough.
Like, horrid. Now, but I mean, so we do get like, you already mentioned his, his Animal Trilogy, his
mm-hmm.
early films.
Yeah.
But then we start going into where he's still doing more of a basic, in a linear storyline. So I don't get what people are saying this. Like Suspiria is different, but before that you had Deep Red, which is a definite linear whodunit film.
Yeah. Yes. And that, Deep Red was probably his biggest, like, breakout film.
Mm-hmm. Like, I love that fucking movie.
Like, his early 70s stuff was really good, and I really appreciate it. But Deep Red, Profondo Rosso really freaking, like, kicked him into high gear.
Such
that's where he got noticed
murder
because
mystery, man, like,
that's where his like brilliant like visual style really came to the forefront.
But with Deep Red, though, the thing that bothers me is like if you live in
Rome,
I think it's just all of his movies. Every building has like an abandoned floor somewhere. Like everything. There's a floor
like
that
an abandoned room,
Sealed
off room.
Okay.
Fuck that. If I live in an apartment building where they're like the sub basement was just full of like fucking cobwebs and sheeting and all this shit everywhere, and it just like made it, and then there was just fucking Goblin in the corner being like, ding 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 playing fucking creepy music, I would not live in that.
I'll be out. Peace.
Yeah, well, you guys have lived a higher paying lifestyle life for too long because that is a Richmond fucking
That's
building.
That's true.
Okay, like I lived in that goddamn building.
Actually, literally,
I just didn't have goblins.
It was either today or yesterday. There was an apartment on Gray Street, I think on East Gray Street, where they came in and said, "Grab your shit. The building's been condemned," and everybody that lived there just had to leave.
Like, Jesus.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's because they went down to the basement and found that there was another basement with
water full of it. Yeah.
And bodies floating around.
Which, who fucking, Jesus, I don't care if your keys are attached. Who goes like, oh, I'm in a sub basement. Oh, there's an opening in the floor full of nasty fucking sewer rainwater bullshit. Let me swim in my white dress and then fucking what now? Oh, yeah. Luckily, the corpses in it didn't kill you. But you're going to die of some shit that you caught in that water.
What did she drop? Her necklace? Her pendant?
It was her keys.
It was her keys.
Yeah, fuck that shit. They're gone forever. You can call a service
that was,
and
what,
get new
Inferno,
keys
Inferno, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Inferno. Yeah. That's the
you
beginning
just change
of Inferno.
The locks and it comes with keys.
Actually, the condemned building is the beginning of the bird with the crystal plumage because that's the fucking building he's living in. So
right.
He's just like, yeah, it's going to be destroyed right after I move out, but I've got it for like 2 more days.
Well, also, just jauntily running around abandoned buildings. I think Deep Red, where he goes into that fucking abandoned building. I'm going to spend 5 minutes with a static camera watching this dude slowly chip away plaster. This is art.
But you know what? At that point in the film, he's uncovering what the very first scene in the film was, where you see the
They didn't need to show it in real time.
And you see the drawings on the wall. I was fine with it. I think it depends on how you want to watch films.
It's when he grabbed
that
piece of glass and started using that to scrape away. I was like, okay, fucking thank you. That's a 45-minute experience of just him picking.
Well, no.
Picking away.
He gradually got smarter.
Humans learn to use tools.
Yes. You really watch The Dawn of Man.
Yeah, right.
One scene.
Look, I sat through the Mother of Tears today. I can fucking watch him chip it plastic.
I have yet to suffer.
Yeah.
Oh,
there are boobs.
No,
are they? I mean, isn't Asia in that?
She is.
Is it her boobs?
Asia.
Can I just?
Yeah,
Asia.
There's some Asia boobs.
I can literally just skip through to the boobs, right?
They're pretty prevalent.
I mean, you don't have to look too far to see Asia's boobs. Like they're
now
out and about.
His ex-wife also showed back up for that movie.
Daria Nicolodi. Yeah.
Yeah, Daria Nicolodi.
Yeah.
Which
she co-wrote Suspiria with him, didn't she?
She was his muse for a long time, and he killed her in so many movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes to like
sounds cathartic, honestly.
Yeah, well, it could be, I suppose.
Yeah.
But there's always been a debate on whether or not like Dario Argento like hates women. But
same thing with Fulci. Fulci dealt with the same shit.
But I don't think that's the case because
Fulci
even
had more self-expressed misogyny though. Mm. Dario Argento is actively pushed back against it, where he's like, "No, they're the protagonists of my film.
Exactly.
They're the driving forces of my films."
All of his most of his films have like a strong female lead.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
whether it's Jennifer Connelly as Jennifer in Phenomena, Susie and freaking Suspiria.
Yeah,
but
if anything, it's just showing that women deal with a lot of shit.
But I think it's kind of oddly amusing that he killed his wife at the time in basically every movie, in like 6 movies, and she came back after they were divorced for Mother's Tears. He killed his first daughter, Fiora, in 1, maybe 2 movies, and then Asia, He never killed her. He just had her raped a bunch of times.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things where she's like, I'm not going to dig into this.
But
I don't want to be the therapist breaking that apart for anybody.
Like,
but on the flip side, like, you know, there was always, you know, for the most part, a strong female lead sort of like protagonist in most of his movies. And I don't know, like, it's, I don't think he ever had any bad, you know, sort of like feelings towards women.
I think there was some self-expressed complicated stuff with his mother, but I think the reason that I think Tenebrae is the one that really gets that because the victims are all women, and there's such graphic
violent.
Kills.
So fucking violent.
It's super. Jesus. It's ultra violent, especially like that great like arm cut off scene.
Oh, the arm.
Oh, and it's all against the white.
Yes.
It's nothing but white, and just like blood splatter like a fucking Pollock painting.
And then we get that backstory where the man was rejected by the woman, and so he, you know. He's starting to act out these things, and you know, then of course we get, you know, the Argento twist and all that stuff. Yes. But the good twists, not the Shyamalan twists. But
fuck,
I think
Shyamalan, a ding dong. You gotta bring his name up. Why do you gotta bring him up?
Because
you're trying to make me angry, aren't you?
I like it when you're angry.
Fuck him. Sorry.
Then I'm gonna give you a good beer and it'll be fine.
I haven't seen Old yet, but I want to.
No, okay. He's gonna trick you. He's gonna trick you.
Shh, we're not talking
just
about
like,
that today.
Just like he always fucking tricks you.
Hey,
god damn it.
Hey,
sorry.
Look at me. We're talking about Argento. Just go back to your happy place. We're talking about Tenebrae.
Goose
it's okay.
Okay.
Just think about paint blood. It's fine.
Paint blood on
Ozzy
walls.
Argento's boobs.
That's right.
Ozzy Argento's boobs.
No, fuck her. She killed Bourdain.
No.
Don't you do that.
Oh, no.
No,
I know.
No.
Whoa.
That's harsh.
No, that's.
Whoa. Wait, was that a thing people were saying?
Yeah. Oh, that was totally a thing that people were saying.
No, that was some awful internet shit.
Yeah.
They were like accusing her of that. She
That's
was fucking
terrible.
Heartbroken.
That's horrible to put on somebody. Why would you fucking do that?
Because people are awful
evil.
And
people are
when
fucking,
people are
sucked.
Looking for
seriously,
fucking
if I met one of those dudes that like posted that shit like on the street, I'd be like, oh, really? I would stab him in the nose.
Fucking in the nose.
On
in
that
the
note,
nose.
No, fuck her for entirely different reasons that there's like sexual assault stuff that has come up about her. But
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know.
Honestly, just fucking Google it. You'll be able to find that info. But we'll be back after... Notes from some of the other shows on the network, and we got some plenty of boost to talk about, as well as a drunken scene or two and more Dario Argento conversation. So stick around. We'll be right back. We're back for the second half of Geeks Under the Influence, all things Dario Argento, the master of giallo and Italian horror. Woo. And before we get into all the spooky on this episode, we're going to get into the people that fill our pockets with gold bullion. Not really. The little bit of money that we make from the show comes from our sponsors, and thanks to you guys as well. First up, of course, is Amazon.com, a place you go for all the Halloween supplies for all your decorations and costumes and old Italian horror movies that you want to find on the Blu-ray or the DVD. You can get that on that's my Italian accent, by the way.
Authentic.
It's very authentic.
I'm confused.
Yeah, so is my accent, apparently. But, of course, you know Amazon. I don't have to explain what it is. If you want to help out this show when you're shopping Amazon, just go to the link at gypodcast.com in the link section. Hit that up. It'll send you right to Amazon. All your shopping you do through that link, we get credit for, so we get a little bit of coin from your regularly priced purchases. It doesn't add to the cost of anything. We just get some of that money instead of Jeff Bezos. So that's nice. And
that's nice.
Yeah, so that's one way to support us. The best way to support us, though, that's in that. Yeah, it was very nice. Borat.
A little bit better.
That was better.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's true. It was Borat.
That was Damn Borat. It. Yeah.
Well, how's he going to be able to afford to send up more Star Trek stars into space?
I would rather we afford better microphones than him having another dick rocket going into space. So
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to just tell you to dream big, dream for your own dick.
I was just going to tell you to suck a dick.
I mean,
I mean,
that'll make you some money.
I don't know if I could earn $400 for a blowjob, but
you get better at giving fucking blowjobs.
Well, you just have to give multiple blowjobs.
What the fuck?
Yeah, getting an SM7 mic is the same way you get to Carnegie Hall is practice.
Exactly.
You are a rough motivational coach.
You know, $10 a pop, you do 40 blowjobs.
I'm
you're
like,
good.
I'm like
a lot
the dude
of blowjobs.
I'm like, the teacher from Whiplash. All right.
If you want to help prevent. me, the Hobbit, from being turned out on the street in order to afford better equipment.
What was that, Nepis for family? Suck jobs!
Yeah.
I got you suck jobs here!
If you want to help me avoid that, which I would appreciate very much, then another way to support us is TeePublic. Oh, we've got over 40 designs currently on our TeePublic page. All the Halloween designs from previous years and a new design as well is on the page. I'm currently working on a Dune design that should be dropping here hopefully in the next week.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I my idea is pretty cool. I think it's going to turn out pretty decent.
I'm excited for that. So. Oh, they have a sale this weekend, TeePublic. Well, oh, yeah. About not the fuck by the time you're hearing it.
Yeah, but keep an eye on TeePublic because that's how frequent every other week there's a sale.
It's like 35% off.
Going into the holiday season, they're going to be having a ton of sales. So keep an eye out for that. Shirts end up being like $13 or $14, but they have way more than shirts. They've got coffee mugs, laptop covers, baby onesies, stickers, buttons, all sorts of stuff.
Still no koozies.
No koozies yet, but we will be a short announcement. We'll have event stuff put up pretty shortly. November 20th, the Virginia Comic Con at the Raceway. We will be back at the con, and not only will we have our koozies and stickers and, well, the few stickers we have left. We're working on stickers, but we will also have hats, koozies, stickers, and the addition of buttons. We're going to have a bunch of different designs that we have on buttons available at the show as well. So
I like buttons.
Load up on the buttons. But if you wanted a shirt or some other product with our designs on it, TeePublic is the way to go. Links on the homepage, links on gypodcast.com/store. Shop through the link. Purchase one of our items. There's at least one design you're going to love. It's got designs from all the different shows. It's got inside jokes from the different shows. It's got spooky stuff. It's got all sorts of different choices that for your heart's desire. So go to TeePublic through our link and support the shows. That's all I got. So that's the sponsors for this episode, which brings us into the real motivation for what we do here on the show. That's the booze we imbibe on a little segment called What We're Drinking.
Hey! We're fucking drinking. We're getting drunk. You want to know? Well, here you go. Hey!
Spooky. Spooky smash.
It sounds like sloth.
Hey, you guys. We're fucking drinking.
Hey. Fucking drinking.
Sorry.
That's okay.
It's pretty. No, that's actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I could keep it together.
No, you're good. Now, okay. What it is not to cry about is the amount of booze that we have on this table right
good
now.
God.
We've got some stuff.
Everybody except you got East Coast local shit, Hobbit. What the fuck, bro?
No shit, man.
Well, and Groots.
I was going to get something for this, but there were already so many shares. I went, fuck it. But let's start with Lowdown so that Murphy has a chance to, like, get it together and be a professional Murphy.
I am a professional. Just usually I'm naked and it doesn't matter if I'm laughing.
Oh, fair. So my share is Aleworks Pumpkin Ale. This is like, I just look forward to this every year. This is one of the two pumpkin beers, now apparently three, that I really dig. 7.3%. Always delicious. A brewery outside of Williamsburg, East Coast local. Fucking just tasty. Tasty treat. The only other thing I got is just the Devil's Backbone O-Fest. Quick note.
No, it's a also classic.
East Coast local. It's smooth. It is malty. It's roasty. That's what I like in my Marzen. So.
Now, Murphy, you brought several treats for us here.
Yeah, I got a little excited. I was just going to bring the one pumpkin ale because I have the Two Silos pumpkin ale. It's their autumn seasonal. It's another East Coast Virginia local. They're from Manassas. And I picked them because on top of having like all of the spices that I adore for the season, it actually has fucking pumpkin in it.
It's fucking tasty.
It's really good.
But I will say between the two, I'm still leaning towards Aleworks, but this I will add at least a 4-pack into my rotation every year of pumpkin beers.
It's nice. Good.
Yeah, both of these taste like pumpkin and not fucking pumpkin spice, so yeah. I'm happy.
Yeah.
Oh no! According to our fucking
peanut gallery,
over here, you're like both of the old men from Sesame Street combined, Alan.
And the other thing that I brought is an Adroit Theory beer called Curse of the Damned. I picked it not only because Adroit fucking Theory is amazing, but the can is
The artwork's always sick.
Yeah,
the artwork's
it's
always
amazing.
Fucking sick.
That artwork
and
is
the
amazing.
And the lighting on it or the colors on it were very Giallo-esque.
Yes.
It's just a brewery that a bunch of metalheads that read way too much H.P. Lovecraft started a brewery.
And some guy and liked a lot of Geiger paintings.
Geiger paintings as well,
and sculptures. Yeah, that's kind of what we got there.
But luckily also the beer is good. So.
It is good.
Yeah.
Now, I will say though that
this one is a lot more gentle than I'm used to their beers being.
It's gentle. It's lighter. Like, like a really heavy roasted malted Marzen. That's personal taste.
I usually go to them for their stouts, so this was a big change for me. This one is their Oktoberfest-style Amber Märzen, and this one is only 5.3%.
I mean, that's standard for a Marzen.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm used to their stouts, where I'm just like, oh, this has punched me in the face, and I can drink half this can.
Yeah, so. The only way you're going to get that with a Marzen is if it's barreled.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So.
But still another, to me, very drinkable beer. It was very light. It was something that
I had
like towards the beginning of this recording, and I'm not too toasty.
I would say that reminded me more, and some of the other local breweries that I've gotten Oktoberfest from have done the similar thing where they don't strictly go like the American style Marzen, where it's really roasty and really rich and really hard caramel on the ends. It's more, they took a traditional Marzen and then mixed it with a Fest beer, which is more of the German style because it's light and crisp.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a balance between the two.
I get a lot of like crisp apple flavors from it, actually. Mm-hmm. But that's just me. And this is another Virginia East Coast local.
It's good.
So. Nice. Plenty of delicious choices on the table this evening.
Hell yeah.
And Groots, you got something we're going to be tasting a little later.
Yeah. I brought an Irish whiskey aged in American oak and bourbon barrels called Writer's Tears.
Nice.
It is a copper pot Irish whiskey. It's delicious. We will sample that a little later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yay.
Sweet. So that is what we're drinking. We've got some drunken scenes that we're going to be doing a little bit later, but let's just get into the meat again. We have some conversations on Argento. We were talking a little bit before the episode that there's definitely a clear line between the earlier 70s and 80s Argento and then the later like 90s Argento. The one thing we talked about a little bit was the third in the Mother's trilogy, which is Mother of Tears.
Yes.
Which goes into the three witches. And
so I want to set up a direct comparison right now. Because I love Dario Argento, but I also love John Carpenter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And these are both very talented directors that had made amazing films early in their career, and then their careers went blah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so Carpenter, we know when that happened.
Yeah.
For Argento, it was pretty much like, I would say, some people say like 87 after Opera. That was it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I give him some credit for some of his 90s movies through like Stendhal's Syndrome. But after that, garbage.
Steven is finger fucking
down
the air.
The listeners can hear you raising your hand
I'm sorry.
Now.
I'm sorry. No, that's a great comparison because Mother of Tears from everything I've read about it, because I have yet to watch it because of everything I read about.
I watched
it.
Oh,
it sounds like Mother
today.
Of Tears is to Argento what Ghost of Mars was to Carpenter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
well,
terrible.
Yeah,
Ghost of Mars is pretty bad, dude.
I have a completely wrapped copy of Argento's Dracula that I still haven't bothered to unwrap, and I've had it for like 2 years, and I still haven't unwrapped it.
Oh, yeah, no. There's a reason for that.
Like, I mean, so it also depends on when you think John Carpenter started going off. Like, I don't like his Village of the Damned that much, but I do love his Vampires with James Woods. That's just fucking
awesome. That was fun. Yeah. That was fun. But like,
I do not like Ghost of Mars.
Like,
fuck that movie.
All of his like later 90s stuff.
His Masters of Horrors weren't bad though. Like, and those were 05
and 06.
Well,
that was 2000s.
Yeah.
Too. Like,
but,
that was.
But I do want to give him credit for those because
Cigarette Burns was awesome.
Yeah.
Was fucking awesome.
Cigarette Burns wasn't him, actually. That was Carpenter.
Right. That was Carpenter.
Yeah.
No, I meant John Carpenter. Oh, I thought you were talking about John Carpenter.
No, I was talking about, because Argento is Jennifer and Peltz.
Yeah.
Didn't like Peltz
She
much,
was staying on top.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
No. The ability to direct a concise short film is easier.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay. And then directing a feature, because you have to make 90 minutes or more to be really entertaining. And so that's why Masters of Horror worked so goddamn well, is because you could tell a story, a short, concise, put together story in 30 minutes.
But see, the thing is that I don't feel like the mother of tears, the problem with the third mother isn't that it didn't tell a story. It did. It just, it wasn't as strong as it could have been if it was made more consecutively with the others. I feel like...
Are you saying that the time frame and where he was what the big, one of the big problems was?
I think that that played a role in it.
You evolve as a director and writer.
You do. And the woman that he had initially picked to be the mother of tears ended up turning down the role, which played a factor in it. She actually was in the Fulci house on the cemetery as well. And you see her briefly in Inferno while our main character is in class.
That's supposed to be the third mother?
That was supposed to be the third mother. That woman was supposed to play her.
Oh.
And that's why he's getting that like crescendo in his head and why he can't focus on, you know, the important letter. But I just feel like the writing wasn't there. I'm going to be super honest. It's a little disappointing. And he still like really went for it with the kill scenes. Those things were fucking brutal. There is a spear right to the vagina.
So Cannibal Holocaust, but Argento.
A little bit, but yeah. Cannibal Holocaust had a stronger plot.
Wow.
Oh, shit. Wow.
No, there it is.
I was gonna say, in line of this, you know, like being that review. Far separated, because Suspiria and Inferno were relatively closer compared to Inferno and Mother of Tears.
Right.
But I was going to say, when it comes to that gap between when you decide to do a sequel, I mean, going back to Groot's comparison with Carpenter's, we get Escape from New York and Escape from L.A.
Yes. Yeah, that's a really solid comparison for how these went together.
Argento's dealing with the same thing that a lot of genre directors kind of run into, whether it be horror or sci-fi or even the super indie directors. I would say, like, even though some of the more recent Wes Anderson movies are not bad, they're not Rushmore, they're not Royal Tenenbaums.
Life Aquatic, they're not Royal Tenenbaums.
There is a time where when you get pigeonholed into having a particular style or approach to something and only being pigeonholed into one specific genre or style of, or tone of filmmaking, that when you're going out the gate, you have all these ideas and you knock them out. That's Carpenter doing like The Thing and fucking Halloween.
Shit,
and
even Assault on Precinct 13. Like, yeah. All of his fucking incredible. Like, early films were
same with Argento doing, you know, Suspiria and Inferno and Opera and Bird with a Crystal Plumage. I mean, like the fucking laundry list. And even Inferno, when it first came out, wasn't really lauded at the time that it came out. It was only years later that it started to be accepted as like a halfway decent film. So you get into where the tone has changed in the genre, that the entire style has changed and you're pigeonholed into having a particular style. So your old fans are going to be annoyed if you try to adapt. But the new fans aren't going to be able to connect to the material nearly as well. But yeah, at that point you kind of like, okay, how do I make this monkey dance a different way after a while?
Right. Well, I would say, in the sense that Argento really kind of created the giallo genre, much akin to like Romero creating like the modern zombie
genre. I'd say Romero the same way. Diary of the Dead and Survival of the Dead are garbage. And even on the audio commentaries, he talks about how, you know, he was just coming up with fun new ways to kill zombies. That's not why I watched the Romero zombie movies.
No,
yeah, that's a fun little addition.
No, not at all.
The helicopter zombie, the Krishna zombie. Yeah, fun. That's fun. That's not why I'm watching these movies.
No.
No.
And he just kind of lost that along the line.
It's just a situation where I'm not sure what happened. Whether he just got tired or complacent, but his quality of writing, his quality of directing, his quality of cinematography, everything. And I can't just, you can't just attribute this to like maybe, oh, they're not going to give him the budget. Cause like the budget was never the thing. Like he was super creative. Like even in as late as like the movie Opera. Mm-hmm. Which was what?
87.
He did one of the most insane creative like shots where he created like he basically mounted a crane on like this crazy like twisting thing to recreate like the shot of like a crow flying around and looking at the audience from above. It was nuts how they did that.
Yeah, it's not that I refuse to let his style evolve, because going into Mother of Tears came out in 2007. So like I knew that it was going to look different because he wants it to look different. But my, like I said, my problem is that the writing didn't hold up in the same way. And And honestly, like, from what you're saying with the camera work, there was a handful of shots where I'm like, oh yeah, this is a solid Argento move. Like, you got the, like, the gazes up and down the staircase and mm-hmm. like things like that, where you see those layers on layers on layers. But there wasn't the quality of character that I've come to expect.
Mm-hmm.
And even from, like, the Three Mothers, I feel like the themes that he was putting forth with these, like, you know, these three women controlling all of, like, you know, essentially being responsible for the magic and the pain in the world. I feel like that carried over, but the rest of the writing and, like, the meat of the story wasn't, I don't know, as toothsome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I could see at a time where he would feel pigeonholed. I feel like as far as the genre, you know, that genre that he made his name in, that, mm-hmm. you know, that it gave him the credence to actually, even though it was never about that, he did eventually was able to have bigger budgets for his films because of what he did and the mm-hmm. and the niche that he was in. But we saw him back and write on films that were outside of his realm because mm-hmm. he could do that. I mean, look, go to Demons. Like,
yeah.
He was a writer, a producer. Like, he was able to, he has flexed his wings in other things. Even Masters of Horror, both those things, you know, Masters of Horror are not at all connected to what he used to do. Like, he has stretched out and done really good stuff.
100%.
So it just sucks that it, I don't know, like, it's, I feel like it was still there. And we're talking about Masters of Horror, that's the most recent, that was 2000, early 2000s. So we're almost at,
you know, like 05, 15
years.
Say, four or five.
Yeah, yeah. So we're roughly at like 15 years from that.
Yeah, he hasn't been a lazy man.
No.
He really hasn't.
I don't want him to feel like he couldn't create because of some of the perception at the time, but like, Demons is a huge hit.
Mm-hmm.
Not even in horror, but in cinema. Like, what they did in that film is amazing. You know,
absolutely. I mean, he was born in 1940 in Rome, and like, he is in his 80s now, so there's not going to be a whole lot more, you know, stuff from him. But,
exactly. That's true.
But I will say, like the biggest problem with the, you know, the Three Mothers trilogy is the fact that, like, the first two came out 3 years apart, and then there was, like, 20-some years.
Yeah, okay, I was wrong.
It went from like 1980 to 2007, 27 years till the next one.
Yeah.
And
so you're saying that Mother of Tears is like the Dumb and Dumber 2 of... No?
Wasn't even directed by the same guy.
No, okay,
You know, whatever.
No.
You just wanted the audible sound of that hurting my heart. Yeah.
Seriously.
You?
Why do you think...
Jesus
so why
Christ.
Do you think it was that it took that long to make the third film?
I don't know if he just wasn't feeling it or if, like, I don't know what was going on. With, I couldn't figure out the answer to that.
Well,
like,
I know mentioned the actress, but like at the time, if he was going to make it in the same time frame within a few years of Inferno, that it would probably have been easier to get that actress.
Well, his wife and his muse, who was the actress in all these movies early on, like, she was throughout opera. Through at 87, like, so they were together. He had the opportunity to make it, but it just didn't happen.
I mean, if I was to venture a guess, we have to look if Mother of Tears came out in 2007. Italy has been dealing with financial crises for the past like 15 years, relatively badly.
More than that,
and
man.
The fact that even Kevin Smith, it took years for him to get financing for Clerks 3, and that is a well appreciated director that should have pretty decent access to producers. And then you got Argento that is dealing with the foreign market that doesn't have nearly as much money as the American market has, and also a lot of financial troubles within that country. I could see it very possibly being a financial issue as well, especially without having a big hit under his belt in recent time.
I bet honestly that it was a handful of things, because Daria Nicolodi actually did come back and had a cameo in The Third Mother. She actually does appear.
So the one he wanted came back.
No. Dario Nicolodi, his muse, his like
ex-wife.
Yeah, his
ex-wife. I was surprised.
She actually does make a cameo as Aja Argento's character's mother in the third. Like, she appears as like a specter sort of thing. And I was like, is that okay? But since Tenebrae came out in 82, I suspect that it was a combination of being like, oh, this person that I'd already like almost canonically lined up for my vision, you know, not doing that and maybe not being fully realized at the same time with like you know, where he wanted to go with the third mother, and having Tenebrae, like, it had to already be in the works for Tenebrae to come out in 82, if Inferno's released in 80. So, like, I think he was already starting that train rolling on Tenebrae, which is a fully realized thing. And if he's already working on that with Dario Nicolodi and, you know, the, John Saxon and
John Saxon.
Yeah.
And
so, hell yeah.
Then he rolls right into that into Phenomena, which
85.
Yes.
That's just
Which you get two more heavy hitters and Dario Nicolodi back.
Even
again.
Romero did, where he didn't do the zombie movies one after another, like he was trying to explore new stories, new ideas, you know, that these are creators.
Yeah, we got Martin Crazies in between.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
But Phenomena, I guess, released here in the States on VHS as Creepers.
Creepers, yes. Yeah. Well, the soundtrack we're talking about in the original release versus the American release is totally different.
Definitely. Iron Maiden, Motorhead.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, the combination of Goblin plus Iron Maiden, Motorhead. When I first watched that, I was like, I love you.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to do an act to this.
What is streaming is Phenomena, though. Like, I believe that's what Shudder has. So
Shudder has a lot of Argento, actually.
Yeah, but
they have that version. Like, where a lot of other places had Creepers.
Yeah.
And it would have the same poster art, but it would say Creepers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're getting the watered down.
Yep.
I actually haven't seen quote unquote Creepers streaming anywhere. It's all Phenomenon, which I like.
So they might have worked out the licensing and stuff. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Now this brings me back to my young adulthood, because I've always been obsessed with General Connelly.
Yes, you brought it up multiple times on the show.
I know. It's a sad story.
She's your Jay Baruchel. Did
you like her in Working for a Dream? Ass to ass.
Yeah, it was sad. But I mean, I'd probably still get her to sign a poster, you know.
Can you sign it on your butt cheek, please?
I always said,
like, you put it on a poster.
Can
size
you sign
of the double ended?
I always said that if, like, when I ran out of things that I immediately wanted signed by Keith David, because he's also in Requiem, that I would get a Requiem poster and have him sign it. I didn't take it out for air, and then get Jennifer Connelly to sign it.
Now,
wouldn't that be awesome?
Like, that's awful, but if you did that, I would have to high five you for every day.
Y'all hurt my heart
for the rest of my life. I'd be like, no, dude, we're doing it again.
Yeah, no, but young Jennifer Connelly, yes.
Young Jennifer Connelly, she did a couple Italian movies right before Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
She did this, and she did a ballerina like horror movie called Etoile, which is also fucking cool as shit.
Yeah.
And that and Phenomena were amazing. And this was right before she did Labyrinth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which was where I met the love of my life.
Mm-hmm.
That motherfucker who plays in the Marvel movies stole from me.
A Vision. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Paul Bettany.
Paul Bettany.
Dying of Fire. Place. Anyway.
I mean,
wow, we got intense.
I get it, though. He's...
I mean, he might be a good actor. He might be a father of children, but, like, you know, fuck that guy.
He's also very suave. Have you heard him talk?
Oh, yeah, no. He has the accent.
He can melt you like butter.
That's how he attracted her, with his stupid fucking accent.
Wait, are you going with the SLC punk theory, like, hey, I put on a British accent, knees to the fucking sky? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically.
What accent was that?
I don't ever want you to give me shit about my fucking accents after that abomination.
You know the difference? Is I don't do it that often. You continually do it.
Yeah, but I still don't know what accent that was.
I don't know.
That's true. I don't know why I'm giving you shit. Like, we all suck at this.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just he's starting to give me shit for what? It's fine.
Outside of my stupid comedic fake hatred for him, Jennifer Connelly was amazing in that movie as a very young actor, and she was great. And like the shit she had to go through, being in ponds of fucking like crazy ass like bugs and shit.
Oh yeah, covered in bugs.
Covered in fucking maggots.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god.
Covered in fucking maggots.
Yep.
That's the scene where I'm like,
that's why.
But they don't feast on live flesh.
I mean,
so you're good.
They don't, but you can hear like the popping in your ears.
It just sounds like wet macaroni and cheese.
Why does pussy and maggots sound the same?
Wow.
That's really fucked up.
I don't know.
We're getting really gross on this.
No, but I mean, accurate.
Pussy Maggot is the name of my Cannibal Corpse cover band.
There it is.
Oh,
shit.
Yeah.
I think we killed Al.
He's like, and I'm out.
But in any case, that was a...
Hello, Cleveland!
It was a fucking awesome movie.
We are Pussy Magnet.
We're Pussy Magnet.
And I would say right before, like, we
here's a song
get off
Jesus.
The air here,
right.
I gotta say, like, he had a couple decent, like, 90s... They weren't great. Like, everything after Opera was kind of okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Trauma, the Stendhal Syndrome, and then Sleepless, those three are actually worth watching.
So you recommend at least watching, you recommend checking those out?
Those aren't bad.
Sleepless was actually 2001.
I haven't seen Sleepless, but...
That was 2001. That was probably the last movie I would recommend ever watching for Argento. So, as much as Argento has always been making movies like that come across like a Technicolor hallucination in a way, you know?
Good way to put that.
I feel like there are a few maybe that people haven't seen so much. And I thought maybe each one of us could just like name one movie that maybe somebody should watch. So I was going to lead off with Opera.
Damn, that's
I'm gonna go. We talked about it outside. That it's not great, but I think it's kind of hilarious. The conclusion of it is so fucking awkwardly weird that I'm kind of into it because it's fucking stupid. Is the card player? Is that the name of the movie?
Yeah.
Holy shit! They're playing like fucking 21 on train tracks, and like she has to win in order to like not be run over by a train or something. It's fucking it's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Oh god.
I hate that movie, but
yeah.
No, valid.
That's like Booze with Friends movie. Yeah.
I don't feel like enough people have seen Phenomenon.
I agree.
I agree as well.
I really love that movie. I love the combination of the classic killer with the supernatural element. I thought that it made sense together. I thought that that Argento blended them pretty seamlessly and let it be weird, which is so important if you're doing something supernatural, is to let it be weird.
Because it's supernatural. It's going to be fucking weird.
He didn't try to explain it away. It was a thing she had, a thing she could do. Donald Pleasance's character was stoked about the thing she could do and thought it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And then they left it at that. Fucking thank you.
Yeah.
Obviously, Paul Bettany saw that fucking movie and he was thirsty. Son of a bitch.
The episode where Anthony like goes after Paul Bettany with all of his fucking heart.
You son of a bitch.
Happy when he died in Infinity Wars.
God damn.
God.
Wow.
Damn,
wow.
He's like, holy shit, dude.
Damn. Oh.
Dude, don't fuck with our listeners, man. Like
and
that
I
is
thought
that is
Argento
all out of
was out for blood.
You
Jesus
can't,
Christ.
You cannot shit on Vision.
You're fucking
death.
A whole like, different universe, yeah, like, dude. Don't even fuck.
That's like making fun of Wash dying in Firefly. You just do not fucking do that.
No.
That's accurate. That's
he's
accurate.
Not like Wash. I mean, Wash did marry and like a really hot woman that I'm attracted to, but.
She is very attractive.
Yeah.
But no, Vision dying, he just turned to gray. I was like, yeah. Good.
Jesus Christ.
How do you simplify? Okay.
All right.
How do we give Lowdown this fucking lead in for his choice?
That's Lowdown, what is your.
Well, so for me, it's kind of hard because, like, for somebody who might not know, and this is how Groose let it in, I'm torn between two, and it's between Deep Red for reasons of just if you want a good thriller, a good, like, whodunit chaser. That's what that movie does for you. But if you want to get a little deeper and you want to see, I think Argento at probably some of his goriest, Tenebrae. Pronounce that for me because I cannot fucking say that.
Yes.
Where I've been saying it wrong.
Tenebrae actually is how it's.
Hobbit, stop.
This is not a fucking tar pit, my dude.
No, but I pronounced it wrong for a while and it's fine. I just want to be able to pronounce it right. Murph?
Tenebrae.
Tenebrae.
No, I feel you because like most people have seen Suspiria.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Most people have seen Deep Red, but Tenebrae, a lot of people have missed.
From the Italian in the room in the peanut gallery, it's Tenebrae.
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 Thank you. The hand, like the pinching finger hand, like Tenebrae.
You just make it bad. Thank you.
I make it sound
Alan.
Racist.
Appreciate
like,
it.
I make it sound like
Tenebrae.
I'm being like super racist.
Seriously.
Oh, I get the pass. Cool.
Oh, Jesus.
Cool.
So we got the Peter Griffin here. A beat about a Buddha, bad a beat a Buddha.
Yeah. No. Well, I have to pass until we do this drunken scene. So we are at the drunken scene point.
It's very rare, but I like it when I break Alan.
I do. I am glad that you mentioned Deep Red, though, because for some reason, even though it's one of his more more popular films and more highly rated films, it took me a while to watch it. And it is one of the ones where he was the most steadfast on making it his way and like fought for adding the puppet to it, fought for adding a lot of different aspects of it. And
fuck,
I think
that puppet.
The puppet is so fucking
that
creepy.
Puppet.
It's so creepy.
That's why they use
it so
on a lot of the new, like the newer reimagined art for it, because it's fucking creepy. But
Tenabre. Yeah.
Tenabre.
Tenabre. No, like that fucking film, if you want to see Argento at like some of his most violent.
Yes.
And when he's, instead of the color palette, he's using blood to fill out the color gamut.
Damn right.
That's the film.
No, that was the bridge film from his Giallo into Suspiria.
Yeah.
It was perfect and it was everything.
Speaking of everything, that's what we're going to try to throw at this fucking
drunken
scene. Oh boy,
here we go.
So.
Let's do it.
Let's do our drunken scene.
Making a drunken scene.
It's a drunken scene.
Oh, God.
I was
it's a
go
mute. It's a drunken scene.
Oh, God. You're doing that?
Yeah.
You're so racist.
The first one is actually...
You're so racist,
the first
Hobbit.
One is from Deep Red. I didn't make up Mario. Like, I simply adopted the Mario. So the first one is from Deep Red. It's from Gianna Brezzi and Marcus Daly.
Mm-hmm.
Suspiria is the next one that we're doing with Miss Tanner and Daniel.
I am.
I don't want to be offensive, but I feel like there. I generally am offensive.
Sorry. I don't think like doing an Italian accent is punching down anymore. I think it's like punching, if anything, sideways. If
it's
not,
like, it's a lateral punch.
It's a lateral
me
punch.
Punching my partner.
So yeah, it's fine.
The first one.
There's no actual venom behind it. It's not like, oh no, we're being shit on. No, it's like, oh. That's bad.
All of these are English dub anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah. I'll do the first one. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be Marcus.
Marcus? Okay. I'll be Gianna.
All right.
Oh, boy. All right, I'll be Miss Tanner.
Oh, then I guess I'll be Daniel.
Cool. Mm. All right, cool.
Oh, wait. Oh, God.
All right, so starting with me, I guess. This is from Deep Red, starting with me.
I think that a woman's got to be as independent as she can.
Oh, don't start with me about that woman stuff. It's a fundamental fact. Men are different from women. Women are weaker. Well, they're gentler.
This is what? A weaker? Gentler?
She howls in laughter, stops laughing, stands, unbuttons jacket, moves to the table, determinedly clearing it.
What on earth are you doing?
Sitting again and holding her arm up, wriggling her fingers.
Oh. Come on, Tarzan, why don't you try to me?
Fuck! What's of that?
I'm wrestling.
Brisquely? What?
Briskly.
Briskly? Is that how you spell it? I had no idea that's how you spell it.
The real word, brisquely. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a type of pasta.
I don't think that's spelled right.
Yeah, I don't think it's spelled right. No, at all.
Okay. Oh, that's me.
Come on, now will you see who's a weaker?
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
You backing out? Woohoo!
Oh,
I'm gonna have a sip of beer now.
That was a lot.
So disjointed.
That was so fucking unfortunate. All right, there's no way that you guys are gonna do as bad as we did. I don't even know.
I was so focused on not. Oh Jesus! All right. All right.
Our Italian contingency of listeners are like, "That's hilarious," or "What the fuck, bro? I thought we were friends." Like it's one or the other.
I thought we were cool.
Oh, I've been absolved. Okay, cool.
I got absolved. To be cool.
Cool.
You're good.
All right. So we got Miss Tanner and Daniel.
Enough. Enough. Do you know what's happened? Do you know?
What is it?
Okay.
Your lousy, disgusting dog has bitten Albert. He took a piece out of Albert's arm.
What?
Did you all hear that? That miserable dog. Tried to mutilate a child. Madame Blanc had to rush Albert to a first aid center to have stitches put in.
That's impossible.
Let's go to the first aid center. Even if you can't see the blood, at least you can hear that poor child's crying.
That's enough now. My dog is a peaceful, faithful animal. He's never hurt anyone. The boy must have done something to him first. I
precious. Oh, the poor little animal. The poor little puppy. If I ever see him within a mile of the school again, I'll have him put to death.
Stop it. I won't allow such talk, you understand?
You won't allow it? Then get out. You and your dog, get moving!
You bitch!
Out!
I'm going! But try to understand that I'm blind, not deaf. Get it? Huh? Not deaf! Do you understand that? You understand? Ah, fresh air! Let me out of this goddamn place!
Get out! Get out of here! Good riddance!
You went Jamaican like halfway through.
I do what I want.
It was like it was Gollum and an angry Jamaican woman just arguing with each other.
I do what I want. I do what I want.
Yet another Richmond scene.
You're saying, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, fair. Yes.
I do what I want.
Holy shit! All right. Well,
lucky I didn't go Speedy Gonzales. I was thinking about that.
Those are things that happened. So yeah, there we are. In this.
Exactly. I've done it before, and you don't like it, so I didn't.
And normally, this is where we would end the episode, but before we do that, we're passing out the shorts. Groots was nice enough to bring some toasting materials.
We got some bone daddy shot glasses. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do.
Yes, indeed.
So again, what is
this? Those hands wrapping that cylinder.
Yeah, this is currently my favorite Irish whiskey. You can buy for a reasonable price. It's called Writer's Tears. It's aged in American bourbon barrels. It's fucking delicious. It's smooth. It's easy. But we are going to be
toasting for a very good reason. For those that follow our social media, you might have seen that one of our brothers, one of our GY family, has passed, and
We at GUI feel that. We feel that loss. It's been a rough week for
everybody.
For everyone.
Yeah.
He touched a lot of lives.
Yeah.
No. Dan was a good dude. He was on a bunch of episodes, and he was just a good friend and a really sweet man.
We had the honor of meeting him through Scotty from Geek Fathers. They'd been friends for over 30 years. They met when they were 9. You know, their families knew each other, that whole thing. And seeing Scotty getting into GUI and being on episodes, started meeting us and expressed interest, and we brought him on happily. I think, if I remember correctly, his first episode was the, unfortunately, X-Men Age of Apocalypse.
It was Apocalypse.
Which, not because of his performance on that episode, because that's what he ended up being his first episode.
It was not the greatest film.
But the Danimal, as he came to be known as and is on our website as, was a family member of GUI, and we miss him, and there's gonna be some time that a lot of us are gonna have to kind of work through the fact that he's not gonna be around, and it's always hard when you lose somebody that's part of the team, part of the family, so.
He was a brother of the network, and we.
He was a brother in life.
He was a brother in life. We need to celebrate this guy.
He was a brother in life.
So, cheers to Danimal.
Cheers to Dan.
Cheers to Dan.
Damn right.
Love you, man. World's a little darker without you in it.
Yeah.
Seriously, he was bright.
So, if you want to do a little something, in honor of Dan, we are going to be adding a fundraiser for his family for final stuff to our link tree that will be, it's on all of our social media stuff.
Yeah.
If you can donate. Also, if you want to watch some incredible Hulk shit while drinking like a nice microbrew beer from some brewery and listening to the Foo Fighters, then you're going to be doing a trifecta of Dan right there.
There you go.
Or just like Chris Cornell's like acoustic shit.
Oh, man, right.
Really love that.
Yeah.
So,
big fan of that.
Much love to Dan. Rest in power. And, And much love to the GY family. Like, this is so much more than just a bunch of nerds that talk about the things that we love. It's actually a group of friends that are there
you know
for
each other.
Like, we are family. Like, this isn't just friends that meet up just to record. These are people that love each other and spend time with each other outside of recording whenever we can. Life is crazy, but, like... Yeah.
We know each other's worries and fears.
And partners and even family members. I mean, like, yeah. This is a family.
No, we've been together through thick and thin.
Yeah.
Pre-pandemic, you know, pre-deaths in the family situation. Yeah. You know, like, we are here for each other, and that's what we do.
The last episode that I believe Dan was on any of the shows was the Smack My Pitch Up, where we did Deep Blue Sea.
Right.
And I teased him about it because you should listen to the episode. It's still a fun episode. But yeah, he was like, let's do Deep Blue Sea with all the same actors because they all aged well. And let's just get Steven Spielberg to direct. I was like, so just did like a shittier Jaws? Like, is that what we're...
That's what we're going with. That's what we're going
with. But it was still a very fun episode because Deep Blue Sea. But
he was a character.
Yeah, definitely. So,
goddamn.
I hate to send it on a down note, but I figured the end of the episode was the best way to do that.
No, we just celebrated everything that Dan was.
Yeah.
To the time that we knew him. Like, I only knew Dan for the last 7 or so years of his life. And a little bit before GUI, I met him through Scotty. And
I'd say about the same, yeah, for me too.
He's I loved my days at breweries with. He was my brewery buddy, man. We would meet up like every chance we had for a new release at a brewery, and like he was my brewery buddy. Like, I don't have anybody that I can just hit up about meeting to go try a new release of a beer. Like I did, like I had, like with Dan, and like we would get one-on-one about shit. Yeah, he was just a good, and he was just such a good person. Good.
Yeah, a few of the showrunners met up earlier this week, and we talked about that. Like, every time Dan was on a GY episode, Steven gives me shit when I'm slacking on my dad jokes, but especially whenever Dan was on, because there was this smirk that he made when he knew it was a bad fucking dad joke. Like, it wasn't funny. It was just like a fucking groaner dad joke, and he would say it with such a level of fucking proudness in his chest of like, I'm giving this fucking terrible fucking dad joke, and then just grin at you with his fucking smirk that was like, fuck up, god damn it, dude.
And then we'd all look at Hobbit like, you're failing.
Yeah, and then it's like he was stealing my fucking dad jokes half the time. So
that's
on that measure, thank you so much for listening to us talk about Argento and our fallen friend, and definitely stick around next episode. We are not doing a Nights in between because we've got Dune coming up on the next episode. So,
We do.
And that should be getting us a little bit closer to going into the every other week thing. Like, it's a lot for us, but I'm very excited about Dune. But yeah, make sure to rate, review, subscribe. Check out our Linktree link for that link to the to donate for some of the final costs for our friend Danimal, and we'll see you next time for another episode.
Grazie bella, Argento.
All right. Jesus Christ. What? You do it. I'm not just yelling on the mic.
Ciao tutti. Ti piace le questi film di questi Argento? Grazie.
Oh.
Yeah, could you imagine me trying to do that?
Please, like, no. Thank you, Alan. That is terrible.
That was totally tell me. That to my... you in your ear?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like, I asked him to tell that to me. All right,
now I got to go deal with this erection. So we're done with this episode. Thank you so much for sticking around. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for listening. Find you next time. I'm Mike the Hobbit. Join us or die.
Shut the fuck up,
Shut
Hobbit.
The fuck up, Hobbit. Yes.
Shut the fuck up, both of you.
GUIPodcast.com.
Next one up is a GUI virgin. First on the episodes, Mr. Dan is here.
Popping that chair.
What's up?
Wearing a delightful, just beautiful t-shirt.
P-yellow.
Let's go Pens.
Yeah.